Welcome to the American Association of Critical Care Nurses Leadership Podcast, exploring leadership in nursing through inspiring conversations. Today's episode is sponsored by AACN's online community forums, offering peer support to nurses on a variety of topics, with information available at aacn.org/online community. Now here's your host, Connie Barden.
Well, hi, everyone. This is Connie Barden, and just super excited today to talk to one of my favorite people in the world of critical care, Dr. Tom Ahrens. Tom is right now Chief Learning Officer at Novex, and he's going to tell you a little bit about what Novex is in a second. The reason I say right now is because Tom has such a long and really distinguished career. We wouldn't even get to the podcast if I tried to tell you about the whole thing. So, Tom, welcome. I'm so excited to chat with you today.
Oh, Connie, first of all, it's always wonderful to see you. And thank you for setting this program up. Just real briefly, Novex is a simulation program that we built along some colleagues of mine, Dr. Pat Kiarkidis and Dr. Patricia Benner. And this is designed to help new graduates become practice ready. You can use this program in schools and other places, but the goal is to try and help improve clinical reasoning skills and do that through simulation. So that's a real quick one. We do have another company that I not just work for, I actually own it, but it's Vivin Health, and that's designed to help the public have better behaviors. We have programs for infection prevention, which are in over 300 nursing facilities. We designed it so that it could be highly interactive but simple. Our latest one, a five-year-old, completed it and did fine. So that shows how easy it is to do.
Wow.
But the goal is to try and make programs that are easy, they're fun, but they do impact.
Yeah. I remember during COVID, you and I had some conversations about how to leverage that technology with the general public when we were trying to teach people about masking and hand washing and all that really cutting edge stuff you're doing. Let me ask you this, Tom. You're a longtime friend of AACN and colleague for many of us, but probably not everybody listening today knows the breadth of your career. So prior to doing this kind of work, what are the cliff notes of where you came from and where you traveled in this amazing career that you've had so far?
Well, we'll keep it simple, Connie, because like you, we could go on a long time. Most of my career was spent at Barnes Jewish Hospital. For about 17 years, I was a clinical nurse specialist in the ICUs there. And then about another 15 years as a research scientist at Barnes Jewish. And then I officially retired from that capacity to work on these other projects. You know, the goal that what we're trying to achieve with what we're doing today actually has the roots in my clinical practice. I've lectured probably at, 30 NTIs.
Yeah.
We've talked about hemodynamic monitoring, we've talked about capnography and sepsis. So those are really the areas that I focus on. From a clinical practice point of view. And it's been a great time. I think one of the things we'll try and get into today a little bit is the use of those types of technologies and how can we use those better to improve patient care.
And what a great person, nobody better than you to talk about this. So we could go on about hemodynamics and so many things, but today's topic, as you said, is going to focus on technology, something that's been near and dear to your heart for many years. I remember sitting in an audience probably decades ago when you and others were talking about how nurses right at the bedside can and should be involved with implementing technology. So that's going to be our focus today. So let me start. Let's say I'm a nurse and I go to NTI or, you know, whatever, some program where they have all these exhibits, and it's so exciting to be in those exhibit halls and you see the latest and the greatest technology and the bells and whistles and plenty of sales pitches to go along. So when nurses do see that and get excited about this kind of thing, what are some of the first questions they should be asking you? Go back home, you're all excited, and then it's like, ugh, nobody here knows what I've seen. What are some of the first things that should go on in someone's mind when they have that experience?
Well, Connie, first of all, it's a wonderful question because, you know, those of us who go to NTI, we'd love to go to the exhibit hall because there's so many, you know, cool new things that we may not have seen before. But let me always have a caveat with that. When you go to the exhibits, you need to know more than a salesperson does. Mm. Salespeople at the, you know, at the exhibits are going to be knowledgeable and they can make the technology sound like it's flawless. That's never correct. Every technology has limitations. And so what our job is when we go back to our clinical practice is if we've really not studied much about the technology, we need to do that. One of the first things you do, and I recommend this to all my graduate students as well, is that we go in to look at the, you know, PubMed, go to National Library of Medicine, see what research has been done on these topics. And I'll just give a real simple example to kind of illustrate that. Mm-hmm. A couple decades ago, there was a technology introduced called the esophageal Doppler. The Doppler, when I first saw it, I didn't like it. I thought it was, you know, this is a device just slides down the esophagus and it gives cardiac output measurements. It seemed uncomfortable to me. But as I started to read more about it, there's actually several randomized controlled trials that showed that it reduced length of stay. And I started to become a fan of it, not because I had any interest or any, you know, reimbursement from a company or anything. It's just this device had evidence that it improved outcomes. And that device has continued to show that evidence. But the point being is, since I didn't know much about it, I needed to study more. And so I would recommend when you come back from the NTI and you're interested in a product, it can be any product, see what the objective literature says. And ideally, you'll find a study that's not sponsored by the company. Even though many companies are very ethical and they won't be involved in the research, and trust me, I appreciate that as a research scientist, but it's going to be viewed with suspicion if the, you know, the study was funded by the company. So ideally, you find a study that isn't like that. Now, if you go to the NTI and see a new product, there's a good chance it's new and there is not a lot of data on it. So at that point, you have to devolve into expert opinion. And then, you know, you start to get a little trouble in expert opinion because we're wrong a lot. Even if we're so-called experts, we're not always right. But I would trust your colleagues, you know, talk to other clinicians in your area if you're interested in doing this. And one thing I always say to do is if you're interested in a particular topic, you need allies to implement any new technology. So your nurse colleagues, your nurse leadership, it's important to have physician colleagues who will join you on this. Otherwise, you won't be able to get much of a traction. So I don't know if that answered everything, but it was a...
Yeah, that's a great start. One of the things that I had done in the past too is I do ask the salespeople, well, who are some of the folks who've implemented this already? And can you give me contact information? Now, they're not going to give you people who've had trouble with it. They're likely going to give you those who've, you know, really had a positive experience. But I have found even in those cases, when you call them nurse to nurse and have that experience, a lot of times they will tell you the good, the bad, and the ugly of the technology.
That's a wonderful point, Connie. I agree 100%. You definitely want to be able to talk to people who have used, you know, the product.
Yeah.
See what their experience is. And like you said, you're trying to determine if this is best for your patients. And so you want the good and the bad. And just because somebody gives a negative evaluation doesn't mean you shouldn't use it.
Yeah.
It could just be their experience. But you put that in your pro and con, you know, analysis is what is it you want. I'm a heavy science person, so I try and see if there's any research studies. But like I said, some of these technologies are new and won't have it. So calling somebody else who is using it is a big deal. you'll get, like you said, I agree. You're going to find very good insight, even from someone who, you know, likes the product. Mm-hmm. If you're talking one-on-one, they'll tell you what the negative is.
Yeah, so, they will. Yeah, I've found that as well. Let me ask you, we're going to get into the money end of this thing in a minute, because that's a big deal, getting stuff implemented. But as we are learning about technologies, which typically are new, if we're all excited about them, wherever we are, it seems like there's so much to understand. These technologies now are so sophisticated, and they can do all kinds of things. And a lot of it sounds good in the mania of NTI or some exhibit hall somewhere where we are. But how do we think about, do we really need all of these capabilities? Do we need these bells and whistles? Is it going to make my workload any lighter, or is it going to add to the workload? I remember years ago when arrhythmia monitors started getting all fancy, and they were telling me, oh, this can distinguish second degree heart block type 1 from type 2. Well, they really couldn't. And you didn't want the thing ringing all day long anyway, because most of the time it was incorrect. So how do we pull apart these alleged functionalities that are so great and look at what do we really need? And is it going to make my life better or more difficult?
Well, once again, I think it's a brilliant question, because there are things that certainly can make a difference. And then there's things that really are, like you said, a bell and whistle. If you have a new urine output device that's more accurate, does that really make a difference? And so to that question is why I always go back to the literature, because I'll use the clinical examples, like with hemodynamics. So you get new technologies out that measure hemodynamics. For example, you can have bioreactants or pulse contour waves being analyzed. And so the question is, not is this device useful or accurate? Did it change anybody's outcomes? And so no matter what the technology is, I always ask, okay, I need to know, did it improve patient outcomes? Because if it didn't improve or adjust patient outcomes, then it's not worth it, no matter how much I like it. And for example, the arrhythmia monitor you're talking about, because I remember that clearly. And the question came up is, first of all, these are often big companies with big marketing budgets, and the price tag on these devices is high. And so the question, they're going to come out selling it like it's the best thing ever. The first question I would always ask is, show me an outcome study. Show me this made a difference. And if it did, then I'm interested. But if you don't have those studies, it's going to be a hard sell for me to get it into the clinical practice area, because somebody else is going to ask me that question. And they're usually on the product committee. And so that might mean that I'm not going to get this in, no matter how much I like it, if I don't have evidence that it changes patient outcomes.
Love that. Show me an outcome study. Super important.
It is. That's one of the most important things is, so I don't care if they tested this in animals and showed it was accurate. That's not the point. Mm-hmm. Of course you should have done that, but you should have done that before you came and talked to me. Show me when you're ready. And Connie, that's one of the things that I find so often, and you have to be careful of this at the NTI, and you're looking at products or anywhere. The companies need to make money. And so they often launch devices before they're ready. We had a wonderful device, the STO2 monitor that measured tissue oxygenation, that I really like. And I think it still would make a difference. But I think they launched it prematurely and without enough evidence. And we found when we started to use it, it had limitations. And right away, how can I buy that if it's got limitations that I don't know how to get around? And they had no outcome studies. And so right away, even though I personally loved it, I couldn't justify getting it in.
Sure. Yeah, makes sense. And even worst case scenario, depending on what the limitations are, could it guide your clinical decision-making in the wrong direction rather
Absolutely.
Than the right direction? Scary.
And that is a key point. And the answer to that is yes, it could have. The first thing, obviously, we have to is not harm our patients. Mm-hmm. some of the new technologies can do that if you're not careful. So any technology we look at, you always have to ask, you know, some questions about that that improve outcomes. And that even includes things like, you know, if you're trying to do telemedicine, even it doesn't matter. What is the technology you're looking at, and how much does it really make a difference? Because you're right, some of these things are going to come with a big price tag.
Yeah. Well, speaking of that price tag, let's pretend we've found this great new technology, best thing since sliced bread. We've looked at all the functionalities. It looks good. We've got a few studies and so forth. Nowadays, anything is going to have to go through some committee somewhere. The days of just talking to your buddy physician to get something in are pretty much gone. It's going to have to go through the scrutiny of committees and so forth. And that's going to include return on investment. So do you have any coaching or thoughts about this whole financial piece, which oftentimes is not the strong suit of nurses, but we've got to learn to be able to talk that talk?
Absolutely. And I've written several papers on this. The idea being is that if you have a new technology, don't even talk about implementing it until you've got cost data. Because now, I don't know that's necessarily correct, but the people who control the budget are the ones who are going to be able to say yes or no to a technology. I'll give an example. Early in my career, I started looking at mass spectrometers for measuring all the gases in an intensive care unit, you know, that a patient was breathing. I loved it. There was no way in heck I could ever show that this was cost effective. But you're right. It was before the time it went under scrutiny. So we did get it because I had a physician ally. Right. But the point of this would be is look at what the outcome studies show. If you don't have an outcome study, it's going to be tough because you're going to be talking in hypotheticals. So, for example, if you have a new technology, and I'll give an example like with capnography. So capnography, you know, just measurement of exhaled carbon dioxide. We knew early on that this could avoid people being accidentally extubated or becoming disconnected from a ventilator. Okay, what's that worth? And because there was no real good studies on it other than saying that, yes, they can do that. Now, today, we've got so many studies showing that it's effective that capnography probably is used almost everywhere. When we were first looking at it, we didn't have that data. So, and just give a real quick anecdote. One of my colleagues was following my advice, following a lecture on this, and he was trying to get it into his intensive care units. And, you know, I warned, just don't take too much time because something can happen. And something did happen. A patient turned over, disconnected themselves, had a cardiac arrest and died. Wow. And so the point would be is, what is that worth? So you can't have anecdotes and they can be powerful, but I almost guarantee it won't change a committee's mind. You need more objective data that this device will save X number of days in an ICU. If you can show that, you've got some good data that you can then make a cost argument on, you know, whatever the current ICU length of stay is or cost for a day. You can get a rough idea of what that is, and then that would be in your cost arguments. That's one of the things that we would look at is do they have an outcome that can be measurable cost-wise? If you don't have that, honestly, Connie, you've got a tough road. Because if you have to have some objective data that someone who knows nothing about clinical practice, who's only looking at the dollars, what does that mean? Now, I'll give an example where this is a problem is let's say that you don't change length of stay, but your data shows you got somebody off a ventilator a day early. There's not as much cost data, but there's human data present. For example, would you like to be off a ventilator a day early? And the answer is, of course you would. So you can argue those softer data. I found that that's a tougher sell. And so the more objective data that we can get, and so whatever technology is, what is it doing to the outcome? And if it's impacting how long they're in the hospital, or if they're using less equipment or less drugs, that all is positive. But this is a tough one for clinicians, and I'm always happy to help anybody get a product evaluated, just because it's important that people who haven't had that experience, like you said, this isn't included in any of our nursing education.
No. And it's actually very intimidating sometimes to stand in front of a whoever, CFO or money
absolutely.
Person. Yeah.
It was funny. We would have these meetings in this huge boardroom, and I'd be asked to come in when it was my turn. And you're sitting in front of all these people who you don't even know, and you have to make a presentation. And it really isn't about the amount of money, because there's products that are being purchased that are far more expensive than what we're asking for. But you have to make a compelling case. This is important for patient outcomes, and that it's going to also improve, you know,
clinical. Yeah.
So,
you know, it's an interesting point that you bring about the hard and the soft data, so to speak. Hard data, just literally, it is about, tell me about the money. How's it going to affect the dollars? And yet there are those who say the world changes with data and with stories. So I think maybe there's space for both, but the hard data must be there. And then if you have a story, so to speak, or an anecdote that sort of paints the picture of the human side of it, I don't think that's wrong, but you can't do it in absence of hard data.
Connie, I love what you just said, because one thing I would teach all clinicians who are trying to get a new product in is become a good storyteller, because people make decisions more on emotions than anything.
Yeah.
So if you were to, again, I'll give an example. We were trying to get capnography in our units, and they had, you know, the administrator had asked me, you know, before the meeting, you know, they wanted some cost data, and so I could do that. And so I shared that with you. Actually, a little bit before the meeting, the administrator, who was a nice person but didn't know clinical practice, called me and said, "Tom, can you tell me more about this capnography?" And I said, "Well, it's not catnography, it's capnography." So I don't think you should be making the presentation. But right. Anyway, they asked me how much it would cost to put the capnography in all of our ICUs. And I said, "No more than $500,000. And I had data that was, I thought was pretty compelling, but it didn't really resonate well. But my physician champion who wanted it said, "Well, I just had a 23-year-old man who went in for a CT scan. He had multiple lung injuries from a car accident, accidentally extubated himself, and he died. And capnography would have prevented that." Well, guess whose argument won? His argument did. It was a better story. And we got capnography in all of our ventilators within a couple months. So your point about being able to convince people with a good story, I think, is very important. And it's underutilized.
Yeah. Just have to have the data to back it up. I agree.
Yeah.
So let's pretend somebody gets through this process. They get the nod from folks to go ahead and move forward. You know, the next big step is convincing staff, oh, here we go. We got another toy to play with here. We're going to implement this on our unit. I learned it at NTI, and the people who didn't go to NTI are rolling their eyes like, here we go again, and all of that. What are some tips and tricks, including physician or other team member involvements, you know, anything you can think of when we are the champion of this thing and we really want it to go forward and be effective? What are some tips and tricks about getting your colleagues on board?
You know, it's again, another great question, because you look at the success of this, I've learned through trial and error. I failed many times, but the best thing that I've learned is I need more champions. You all know, if you're in an area, you know who the leaders are, the informal leaders. I need them. And before I start teaching the staff, I get them involved. Because what I want is, when I'm done with the presentation, I want them there to reinforce what I'm saying. So it's really all about knowing what's the dynamics of your unit? Who are the people who are going to be powerful and be able to support you? Sometimes these aren't the people who have the highest degrees I know clearly, you know, in my medical intensive care unit, who I would go to immediately if I wanted to implement something, because she had so much informal power that it was, she was a perfect ally. And so you looked at who else can help you. You know, you can say, yes, you have to do this. And so people will comply, but you want them to do it because they want to do it, because it's the right thing to do. And that's where getting other people beside yourself as a champion is going to be important.
How important are the role of physicians in this? Do they help, or do they get in the way, do you think? You can be honest. Yep.
I tell you what, they can be both.
Yeah.
One of the best things I've ever done in my clinical practice is become friends with my medical directors.
Yeah.
I've been fortunate to work with really a couple awesome people. And when you have that, the influence they have over other physicians is just enormous. I will say, if you don't have physician support of some kind, it's going to be hard to implement anything. You need to have, and again, I always liked our medical directors because they had more influence than a single physician would. But you go with what you have. You know, most, you know, if you're working in your ICUs or stepped on air, you know the physicians that are important. Trying to get them on board is going to be a key step to make this implementation process work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you're right. Very influential. And I think it just makes it, the more people that are on board, I think the better the chance of success will be.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Have you seen any? Go ahead.
No, I would say it's a critical step. I've tried to implement things that I thought were wonderful. Nobody would resist at all. Well, that was wrong.
Yeah.
So you need to have as many people as you can supporting you.
Yeah. And, we're just talking today about technology, but keeping in mind that in the typical environment, we're implementing so many new things all the time, whether it is some new measure that we have to follow or some other safety thing we have to do and so forth. It's totally a sensory overload in terms of trying to keep up with all this stuff. This is why we have to be selective and have a good case when we want to bring technologies in. Do you have any thoughts about best ways to educate and train people before a rollout, good models around that?
Well, that's why I built these other companies.
So uh-huh. Yeah.
You know, the best way to learn anything is with, you know, before you actually use it, you need simulation. You can't reach everybody. And my goodness, people are busy. So you want to let them have the ability to practice on their time frame. And this might be when they're at home. So the idea is to, now this is hard because we don't have simulation for everything. I'm not talking about going to a sim lab.
No.
I'm talking about doing it on a computer. Things that anybody can do. Actually, our programs are designed primarily to be used on the phone. So you can use them anywhere. At least our public program is. But the idea is, you have to do some type of simulation of these technologies and put people in clinical scenarios where they have to develop their clinical reasoning. So, and I use examples like even from pulse oximetry, again, to capnography. There's so many nuances when you use these. If you don't, it's one thing to put the device on and get it to work. Now you got to interpret it. That's not done in a 5-minute in service. You need people to go through, well, what do you do when you have a, you know, abnormal level? When is it time to call the physician? What are you going to say to the physician when you call them? You know, this could be even from as simple as a glucometer reading. You know, what levels are dangerous and what do you have to do? So, we don't have simulation yet for everything. And so that's a problem. That makes education much more difficult.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's an area that nursing really needs to step up in, is to help with more simulation that people can do easily and, you know, at any time of their choosing.
Yeah. But I hear you say also just finding ways to incorporate clinical reasoning, what if scenarios, how do I tell if this data is accurate enough for me to act on, those kinds of things. So we don't get a lot of false alarms. And
that's exactly right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And now, of course, I feel like we're going through the nursing process talking about, you know, this whole thing, but we have to look at evaluation or effectiveness. So we've got this great new piece of equipment. We've done all the right steps, got it approved. We got our buddies on board, implemented it in the unit. It seems like it's a reasonable thing periodically to come back and look at, was this worth it? Should we keep it? All of that kind of stuff, because otherwise we could just add and add and add technology and be like a robotic unit and never take anything away. So what did you have to say about evaluating effectiveness of what we do?
I think before you implement, you need to have outcome goals. And so the idea would be is what time frame are you looking at? So, for example, if you can implement a technology and let's say that you can get a good sample size. And there's a bunch of ways of getting good sample sizes, but you can even do a power analysis. But the idea would be is how many people do you need? And I would have this in the proposal when I'm submitted it for approval, is we will know within, say, 6-12 months, did this work? And if it didn't work, you have to say, was something wrong with my evaluation technique? Or did the technology really not make a difference?
Yeah.
And if you don't have that in, you're right. Not only did you waste money, that's how you can hurt people. So you want to make sure that before you even start, you know where you're going.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in 6 to 12 months, for example, I'm going to report what the impact of this technology was. And that'll let you keep the technology, because if there's a budget crisis, you might find administrators asking, what can I take away? And you might really not want to give this up. So you better have the data to support it. So Connie, it's an important question that isn't often asked, but before you implement anything, you should know what do you expect to see within, you know, a time frame.
Is the flip side of that, Tom, let's say the technology doesn't really support what we were trying to do and kind of don't like how it's working. It's adding to our workload instead of helping. We need to be thoughtful about that up front as well, I guess, in terms of interfacing with the company. And how are there any, there's no such thing as an escape clause once you've bought this, but it's kind of scary to make a big investment.
Well, one of the things is most of the time that'll be handled in purchasing where they'll sign a contract. And the contract will have a time frame. So, for example, this happened to me multiple times in my career because we'll have competing companies and, you know, like a company will lose and the salesperson is devastated. And I'll go, listen, this contract is up for renewal again in 2 years. Don't give up because, you know, you never know what's going to happen in 2 years.
Yeah.
So the idea would be is that we're never locked in. You should never be locked into a technology. The contract should always be written. And Pershing's pretty good about this in my experience. They'll keep them on their toes. In fact, to me, sometimes too much. They end up, technologies get used less because they're under pressure not to use them for cost reasons, not for clinical reasons.
Yeah, great point. Well, I'm going to ask you a question as we unfortunately have to aim towards wrapping up. I could chat with you about this for a really long time. And this is a little bit, it's related, I think, but on a little different tack, because how can we talk about technologies nowadays without mentioning AI, ChatGPT, all this other stuff that is rocking the world, not just in healthcare, but in every way? What advice do you have around these kind of technologies that are coming in left and right, particularly related to healthcare, ethics, anything you want to say about those kind of technologies that are here already?
Yeah, it's going to be fun to see what happens, but we apply the same rules. So first of all, a lot of the AI that will come out will be proprietary. And so we won't see the algorithms that are built into those. But what I can do is to ask, did it improve patient outcome? So, for example, ChatGPT is a fun thing to play with, but I doubt you're going to see ChatGPT change patient outcomes. I think AI will. AI has the potential to, read EKGs, chest x-rays, a whole bunch of things much more accurately than we had in the past. And that's wonderful. The companies that invest in that are going to be able to show some extent improved patient outcome. But you bring up, again, this point's very good. Say that it can read, you have an AI that can read EKGs better. Great. Did it improve patient outcomes? Because if it didn't improve patient outcomes, then I'm not going to buy it. So that's always the best thing. And so, because what you're going to see right now with AI is a lot of this did better than a human. Okay, great. Then show me, did it improve patient outcomes? That's what we're looking for. And so those are the types of studies that we're going to be seeing. But it's a very good question because AI is going to become very common in a lot of things we do. You'll eventually see closed loop IVs, closed loop ventilation. I mean, these are already out there. Yeah. It's a matter of, are they safe enough for patients? And this is where you absolutely need outcome data.
Let me ask you, Tom, you and I have been in this business for a long time, both of us, and you've seen a lot of changes. And now we look forward. What gives you hope when you look forward in the world of nursing and healthcare?
Again, it's people. I think we've got some wonderfully talented people in nursing. We need to develop that a little bit better. If you look at our educational system, they don't talk much about things like evaluating technologies. Mm-hmm. Our undergraduate education actually does very little in terms of preparing what are the newest technologies. We have to be better in that. I've just seen over and over the new graduates are still excellent, but they need more clinical guidance. And that, I think, is very hopeful. And the other thing is they're going to come with more openness to things like AI. If I were to say, what are we missing? We need to be preparing them to critically analyze, is the technology ready? This is where ACN's been really, I think, the leader for many decades, is trying to advance, use of technologies. If we're able to, tie in the bright young minds that are coming in with, implementing new technologies, that's exciting to me. But boy, we've got to give them some support. And this is what I think can do it.
Yeah, we have to create environments where people want to work and where they can be successful. 100%. Yeah. Tom, I was going to say, always when I talk to you, whether it's officially in a session that you're teaching or just if we're chatting on the phone, I feel like I'm at the foot of the professor who is really so skilled at getting messages across. And I could recap what I heard you say, but I think to keep it tight, what I would say is for anything you're doing in the clinical area, what matters is, does it affect patient outcomes?
That's bottom line. If it doesn't improve patient outcomes, it doesn't really matter. And it can be softer, like, if we're able to get somebody like set off a ventilator a day faster, to me, that's important.
Absolutely.
But then the harder the data is, the more likely you're going to be successful. It's seeing those really cool things at NTI, in the exhibit hall. Be asking those vendors, I need your outcome studies before I go back and, start to show this around.
I love the advice. Know more about a thing, a technology or whatever, than the salesperson does. Ask for their outcome studies. Get the data, hard and soft data, but especially the hard data, you got to have it. Set outcome goals. Look at the evaluations. And in the end, whether it's AI, ChatGPT, anything else, a new monitor, anything, what matters is, did it help with our patient outcomes? So Dr. Tom Ahrens, you are the master at this. And anyone who's listening just got a half hour or so primer on how to do it well. And I can't thank you enough for talking with me today.
Honey, thank you. It's always a pleasure to see you. And I look forward to seeing you soon.
Great.
Thank you for listening to the American Association of Critical Care Nurses Leadership Podcast. proudly sponsored by AACN's online community forums, with information available at aacn.org/online-community. We welcome your thoughts on this episode or ideas for future topics. Feel free to email us anytime at podcasts@aacn.org.